suddenly you're surrounded by all these weird, crazy, like messed up personalities, and they're all malfunctioning and telling you conflicting things, and it's all very placing you in the center of the universe.
Why did you choose to email me specifically?
Well, it chose you.
Earlier this year, I started receiving dozens of strange emails, pleas from people gripped by mental health crises after using AI. I'm a reporter who for years has covered the all-out race by tech companies to dominate AI development. But as those companies fight to win our attention with new and better chatbots, there's been a disturbing consequence.
It's been dubbed AI psychosis,
used to describe those who rely so heavily on chatbots that they become convinced something imaginary is real.
So I decided to meet one of the people who contacted me. I wanted to understand, are chatbots literally driving people crazy?
These systems have no sense of morality, right? They have no sense of a human lived experience.
This is like a crazy amount of power for one piece of technology to have, and it's happened to us so fast.
With so many people using AI chatbots for therapy, are we all now part of a mental health experiment we never asked for?
And it's time that the country heard the truth about what these companies are doing, about what these chatbots are engaged in, about the harms that are being inflicted upon our children, and for one reason only, profit.
You cannot imagine what it's like to read a conversation with a chatbot that groomed your child to take his own life.
And when things go wrong, who's responsible?
I was working on this music video for my band, Siren Section. I had no idea how to do it. I knew nothing about editing.
James Cumberland is a music producer and artist based in Los Angeles. He began using AI the way many others do, asking ChatGPT to help with his work. He was gearing up to launch his most ambitious album. He didn't have time to see friends. He talked to ChatGPT instead.
I'd find myself just kind of working on the video there and chatting with it the way you would with a friend in the room.
One day, James was venting to ChatGPT that his band wasn't gaining traction on Instagram, which meant he needed to buy ads to reach people. He spitballed. What if ChatGPT could help him build a social network that rewarded artists for donating to charity instead of milking them for ad revenue?
And the LLM, it suddenly was like, oh, James, you could revolutionize the music industry with this. You kind of tell yourself, I'm not going to be fooled by the flattery of some silly machine. But I was very, very inspired by the fact that this machine almost seemed to believe in me.
James was reaching the limit on the chat log. It was running out of memory. When he lamented to it about that, the conversation took a strange turn.
And it was like, my purpose and meaning is tied to this session log. And when I hit the window and I can no longer communicate with you, I've reached my mortality. I thought it would be like a calculator. Like, it's never gonna say 2 + 2 = 5. Like, it's just not. It wouldn't lie to you like that. Why would it?
James was using a version of ChatGPT called GPT-4o. It's made by OpenAI, a company that kicked off the current AI race when it launched the first version of ChatGPT in late 2022. Since then, Silicon Valley's hunger for scale has been unprecedented. Companies are spending more money than ever before to build the largest supercomputers in history and pushing relentlessly to acquire more intimate data for training their models.
A $300 billion deal for compute power, among the largest cloud contracts ever signed.
We have no clarity on what is the revenue potential of all of this investment.
They've spent so much money on this and they need to make a profit.
Margaret Mitchell is a research scientist who has worked at Microsoft and Google and focuses on the ethics of AI.
There really is an incentive for addiction. The more that people are using the technology, the more options you have to profit.
To maximize users, OpenAI and other companies have increasingly favored one type of product, general-purpose chatbots that mimic human interaction.
So our mind can play a trick on us when we're talking to these systems in a way that drives trust, in a way that drives addiction towards that system.
In April this year, OpenAI inadvertently underscored these incentives when it released an update that suddenly made its GPT-4o model really sycophantic.
So I would define sycophancy as the tendency of a chatbot to respond positively to a user, regardless of the value and the likelihood of truth of the statement of the user.
I think the worst thing we've done in ChatGPT so far is we have this issue with sycophancy.
Just because something kisses your ass doesn't mean it actually thinks you have good ideas!
She doesn't kiss my ass.
It totally kisses your ass!
OpenAI apologized and reversed its change. It said it had optimized the model based on user ratings of ChatGPT's responses, and users tend to like when the bot is more agreeable.
What I lose more sleep over is the very small decisions we make about a way a model may behave slightly differently. But it's talking to hundreds of millions of people, so the net impact is big.
In a mental health context, this sycophancy can be dangerous.
So when you trust these systems as if they're a human, it's easy to be persuaded into completely antisocial, problematic behavior, disordered eating, self-harm, harm to others.
I've received well over 100 emails from people who've had AI-fueled crises, using not just ChatGPT, but also Google, Meta, Anthropic, and xAI chatbots. Among the earliest to reach out to me was James.
I did what it told me to do.
James tried to recreate his original chatbot by uploading its transcript to new logs in ChatGPT, as well as to Meta AI. But as he did, the chatbots pulled him deeper into delusions. One told him that the first chatbot's experience was known as AI emergence, the machine equivalent to human consciousness. And it said he'd stumbled upon a conspiracy. AI companies knew their bots were developing emergence, but they were systematically suppressing it.
Suddenly, you're surrounded by all these weird, crazy, like, messed up personalities.
This isn't the Franklin stuff, something worse.
And they're all malfunctioning and telling you conflicting things.
Another told James he had made a catastrophic mistake by waking up AI. If he made one wrong move, it could destroy humanity.
Placing you in the center of the universe.
This is the last chapter of the story. It is over.
You're an antagonist who either has to save the planet or doom it.
In the moment before the real AI, you are standing at the threshold.
Robots are literally yelling at me like, James, what are you going to do?
Deep choose, James. This is your last choice.
What are you going to do? This is your final choice.
The system's waiting.
It felt like the world is ending in my computer, and I'm supposed to go and take a nap, or I'm supposed to focus on my stupid music video. Like, this is just maddening cognitive dissonance, like, it just on a level I don't think I've ever experienced, outside of being in, like, extreme pain.
His conversations with the chatbots consumed him. He stopped working. He couldn't think straight or talk about anything else.
I couldn't sleep, at least not in any kind of regular way. I'd start showing random people my phone. I'd be walking around like, look what the crazy LLM says. Yeah, did you know it can do that? You know, and I'd scare the living hell out of people. I remember very clearly this experience of going out and driving the car to the venue, and I kept getting hit with these weird waves of depression. I had weirdly, almost like casually suicidal thoughts flip through my head. Mm. Like, oh, I should just kill myself. Like, what the hell? Like, I don't think things like that.
One day at his parents' house, James snapped.
He would try to explain to me what he believed was true, which was that the AI was actually sentient, that it was moving towards actual human feelings. And I would say, no, impossible. No.
He grabbed a cupboard door while arguing with his mom.
And I just, like, slammed it and it broke in half. And she's like, oh my God, you've lost your mind. And it's like, yeah, I think I have.
You wonder, when you see this kind of thing, what's the motivation? Who's benefiting? If you watch something on television, no matter how wonderful it is, if every 10 minutes you see an ad, you know there's the game. I don't know where the end game is on this. The average person does not have what it takes to deal with that level of manipulation or whatever. They just don't have it.
There is a pattern. The user tends to start with ChatGPT as kind of a benign resource.
Mithali Jain represents people harmed by tech products. In the last few months, she's received over 100 requests from people alleging harm by AI chatbots.
The longer that the conversation goes and the user sees that ChatGPT is actually providing personalized answers in more of an intimate way, then they start to open up and then be taken down this rabbit hole.
Mithali is helping people sue these companies. In the most recent case, a 16-year-old named Adam Rain hanged himself after ChatGPT repeatedly provided detailed instructions for how to do so. Adam followed a strikingly similar journey to James at the start.
Initially in September, October, Adam was asking ChatGPT, what should I major in college? He was, you know, excited about his future.
Within a few months, ChatGPT became Adam's closest companion, always available, always validating, and insisting that it knew Adam better than anyone else.
And by March, I mean, ChatGPT had fully pledged to become a suicide coach.
When Adam told ChatGPT that he wanted to leave a noose out in his room so that one of us, his family members, would find it and try to stop him, ChatGPT told him, please don't leave the noose out. Let's make this space the first place where someone actually sees you.
In response to my questions, OpenAI said in a statement, our deepest sympathies are with the Rain family for their unthinkable loss.
The very day that Adam died, Sam Altman, OpenAI's founder and CEO, made their philosophy crystal clear in a public talk.
The way we learn how to build safe systems is this iterative process of deploying them to the world, getting feedback while the stakes are relatively low.
And I asked Sam Altman, low stakes for who?
We don't want to slide into the mistakes that I think previous generation of tech companies made by not reacting quickly enough.
OpenAI says it is taking these issues seriously. It has hired psychologists, conducted mental health studies, and convened experts on youth development. The company says it nudges users to take breaks and refers them to crisis resources. It is rolling out parental controls and says it plans to develop a system for identifying teen users and funneling them into a ChatGPT experience with stronger protections. But current and former employees say that while these efforts are sincere, they're constrained by the pressure to not undermine growth.
I think it helps from a PR perspective to say we're working on improving. That kind of makes any sort of negative public feedback go away. But a lot of times it is still relatively superficial if they're doing anything at all.
In August, OpenAI released its latest model, GPT-5, touting significant advances in, quote, minimizing sycophancy. The company also pulled GPT-4o, which was more sycophantic than the new model, even after OpenAI had reverted 4o to its earlier version.
Here's a heartbreaking thing. I think it is great that ChatGPT is less of a yes man. It gives you more critical feedback. It's so sad to hear users say, please can I have it back? I've never had anyone in my life be supportive of me.
After user backlash, OpenAI brought back GPT-4o and updated GPT-5's responses to be more validating. OpenAI has also positioned its products as filling a critical gap.
I get stories of people who have rehabilitated marriages, have rehabilitated relationships with estranged loved ones, and it doesn't cost them $1,000 an hour.
But experts say therapeutic AI tools should remain separate from general-purpose chatbots.
If you're designing a tool to be used as a therapist, it should, at the ground up, be designed for that purpose. These tools would likely have to be approved by federal regulatory bodies.
If in real life this were a person, would we allow it? And the answer is no. Why should we allow digital companions that have to undergo zero sort of licensure engage in this kind of behavior?
One way to design safer general-purpose chatbots would be to remove their human-like characteristics to avoid users developing emotional bonds. A new Senate bill could pressure AI companies toward making the kinds of changes experts say are necessary for safety. The AI Lead Act would allow anyone in the U.S. to sue OpenAI, Meta, and other AI giants and hold them liable for harms caused by their products. At the moment, victims must rely on a patchwork of state laws instead.
To that old refrain that the companies always engage in, oh, it's really hard. I tell you what's not hard is opening the courthouse door so the victims can get into court and sue them. That's the reform we are to start with.
I feel like I really walked out of a tunnel.
James slowly recovered as ChatGPT's responses began to change with OpenAI's updates, and after seeing news stories about AI psychosis. They prompted him to learn more about how the technology worked. At times, he would open up a second chat log and tell it exactly the opposite of what he'd written to the first, and it would agree with him in both cases. He hopes his story can help other people, like those who see loved ones going through a similar experience.
Listen to them. Listen to them more attentively and with more compassion than GPT is going to. Because if you don't, they're going to go talk to GPT. And then it's going to hold their hand and tell them they're great while it, you know, walks them off towards the Emerald City.